Come in front, near the door. There's a lot of space here. Come, come. I don't bite. Today is Gudi Padwa, the Marathi New Year, Sindhi New Year as well. It is apparently the day Brahma created the universe. Better? The human birth is the most precious, but we take it for granted and live our lives steeped in ignorance, the mind full of conflict, criticism, condemnation, malice, jealousy, ill will, shame, guilt, and so on, directed either at others or myself. What a waste. Ramana Maharshi said, "The purpose of life is to realize the self." And my teacher said it in simple terms, to find peace and harmony in daily living, because it is more relatable that way. Realizing the self sounds difficult. And Siddharameshwar Maharaj, who was Nisargadatta Maharaj's guru, gave a wonderful example. He said, when you take rice and you have to clean it and remove the stones, once you remove the stones, what is left is the rice. Only the stones have to be removed. And this teaching does a very good job of removing the stones. So rather than a quest for the self, it holds the ego by its hand and shows the ego, hey, the hand of God is above everyone, including the people you don't like the most. And it goes on to explain why. So what is happening is your attention, which was directed at individuals, it is mitigating that. Your thinking mind, which is constantly running cartwheels upon cartwheels upon cartwheels of what people did to me, said to me, how they should have behaved, and so on and so forth, it is dissolving. When this thinking mind is dissolved, I find I am naturally resting in pure being. Because if the mind is vacant, my natural state is being. The baby is pure being. You don't have to do anything to be pure being. It is your natural state. But all this garbage which got accumulated since childhood, that needs to be cleared. If there is no one to hate, then a large part of the garbage is cleared. Others as well as myself. And if there is no one to hate, it actually means there is no one to love. Because love and hate are the polaric opposites in duality. The problem in this polarization is we will start accumulating people who love us and keeping aside people who don't like us. So we have split God's creation into two segments. And all our lives go by like this. Why should I waste my time with this person? This person loves me. I will give my time to this person. Is that the realization of life? Or is the realization to see the one behind the many? Is the realization to see that everyone in your life is entitled to their point of view, which you may or may not agree with, but you cannot take away their entitlement? Because their entitlement is based on their genetics and their conditioning, which God made. So life no longer becomes an argument when one understands this. It no longer is a fight, because if you want to fight, God will put enough people in front of you to fight with. But if you understand people, where they are coming from, why do they do the things they do? Rather than opposing and reacting, reflecting, contemplating. If someone is a thief, rather than criticizing the thief, figuring out what made this person a thief. Then you find out his father was a thief. His entire conditioning was thievery. And you realize people are who they are because of their circumstances. So we are no longer too quick to judge anymore. Who am I to judge? Because when I judge, I'm playing God. So by and by, when I see in my own life, with my own relationships, that there is a lesson to be learned, that is called living a life of awareness, consciously. When I feel pain in a particular relationship, realizing that that pain is inside me, it is bringing something out which is within me. But because this world is full of forms, I have a form to blame for my pain. But the feelings are rising within me. For example, if I had a low self-worth in childhood and someone in my life triggers that feeling of low self-worth, again, I have someone to blame. But if I start looking at this issue of low self-worth, why do I feel it? Where did it come from? And understanding this play of life, then my obsession is no longer with the person who is making me feel like that. So I'm no longer mesmerized by personhood and individuals. Anyone wants to come at the back? And that is why in our scriptures it is said to associate with the wise. Because in life, our parents are first gurus because they are teaching us about life. Of course, based on their conditioning, no doubt. But they mean well for the child in most cases. Then we are sent to school where teachers are teaching us because we don't know those subjects. Then we become adults. And then because of a hardwired ego, pride and arrogance has stepped in. I am in charge of my life. But what about navigating through the river of life, pleasure and pain? Wouldn't it help if someone has been down that river before you and can guide you? That is the role of the teacher. The teacher is not a crutch. The teacher is showing you that, hey, up until now, you have seen life a certain way. But the reality is quite different, quite different. This game of life, which became me versus you, me versus the other, is in essence me and the other. Whenever I feel I'm against someone and versus someone, one just has to remember this, that this person in front of me is alive, conscious, just as I am. So the fact is, if someone says something loving to me, consciousness is saying something loving to me. If someone says something which is hurtful to me, consciousness is saying something hurtful to me. I no longer take it as a personal affront and battle, which disturbs my peace of mind. Then the next realization comes that consciousness is not really saying anything to me. It is saying it to consciousness. One person speaks, consciousness is speaking through that person. Consciousness is listening through this person. If we had this understanding, would we really have a problem? But we have the problem, not because of our faults, because of this design of this duality, the dualistic world, where it appears people are apart from us. That is the Maya. So association with the wise, rather than just playing out old scripts, being with friends, social engagements, wearing masks all the time, trying to win people's approval all the time. Those who are drawn to association with the wise start seeing that they are changing themselves now. Simply by association, becoming quieter, the mind is becoming quieter because most of the games are being given up. Most of the games I used to play to make me feel good are now seen to be worthless. It's really quite a cosmic joke how much of time we have invested in this battle to survive. It is ultimately survival. If someone doesn't like my point of view, I'm afraid I will die because my point of view represents me. You see how subtle it is? The ego does not want to die. It is not about the death of the body, it is the death of the ego. If someone does not like me, I'm afraid. If they don't like me, I will die. I know it sounds absurd, but it is true. If they like me, this is me. This is who I am. I am the one who's liked. But the joke is, where were you in deep sleep? In deep sleep, you didn't want to be liked or disliked. You were absent. The baby does not care whether it is liked or disliked. It is pure being. So who is this person who has got created by divine hypnosis, who wants to win votes? There is a beautiful story, quite a common one, about the Rishi Narad. He goes to Lord Vishnu and says, Vishnuji, I really want to understand what is the importance of satsang. So Vishnu says, you out of all people are asking this question, a rishi of your caliber? He said, yes, I have not understood the true importance of satsang. So Vishnu says, all right, you go down to earth in so and so location, you will find a worm. And you ask the worm this question, what is the importance of satsang? It's very simple. Goes to the exact place, finds the worm, and asks the worm, can you tell me the importance of satsang? And the worm dies. So Narad is quite zapped. How did this happen? So he goes back to Vishnu and said, hey, you know, this didn't go anywhere because I asked the question and the worm died. So Vishnu said, don't worry. You go back down, and in this place, on this tree, you will find a parrot. This parrot will certainly answer your question. Narad goes back down, finds the parrot, looks at the parrot, waits for a bit, and then asks the parrot, can you please tell me what is the importance of satsang? And the parrot falls down and dies. Now Narad is a bit perplexed. So he goes back to Vishnu. He said, boss, something is not right because the worm has died, the parrot has died. So what do I do? Am I doing something wrong? Is my approach wrong? Vishnu said, how can it be wrong if I am guiding you? So you go back down and you'll find a newborn calf, and that calf is waiting to be asked this question. So Narad says, are you sure? I mean, are you confident? He says, very sure. So Narad this time is very wary and goes, finds the calf, and he's waiting because he feels he should not be too quick. So he waits. Everything is peaceful, the atmosphere is fine. And he asks the calf, after spending some time, in a very gentle way, what is the importance of satsang? And it dies. So now he is furious. So he goes back to Vishnu and says, see, I have murdered a worm, a parrot, and a calf. This is too much. I can't handle this. So Vishnu says, look, I'm really sorry, but let's give it one more try. This time you go to the palace. The king has just got a newborn child. And you go and ask the child this question. He said, impossible. If I murder the king's child, I'll be beheaded. So this I'm not doing. No, you have to do it. You'll get your answer. I guarantee it, you'll get your answer this time. 100%. So he goes and he sees this child. But now he says, I will wait. And he sets up his hut outside the palace gates. He says, I'm in no rush. This question has been bothering me. I'm going to wait it out. And so this baby starts growing. Narad is waiting and waiting and waiting till he feels now he's ready to ask this boy. So the boy is playing around in the garden. The guards are distracted. And he goes up in full confidence now, but still scared. And he asks the boy, what is? He stops. He said, I can't do it. Every time, what? So the boy looks at him and says, ask what you want to ask. He said, I can't. So the boy replies, because I know your question. I know your question. He said, how could you know my question? And the boy's form changes to Vishnu. And the boy says, who's now Lord Vishnu, you spent a split second with the worm. The worm got liberated. You spent little more time with the parrot. Parrot got liberated. Much more time with the calf. Calf got liberated. And because of satsang with you, the worm got liberated, took the form of the parrot, took the form of the calf, and now here I am as a young boy. That is the importance of satsang. Because of their association with you, they got liberated. And liberated from what? From this dream of separation. If we agree that God is all powerful, all knowing, all pervading, can any person be apart from God? Nobody can be apart from God. The living dream of life is to consider people apart from God. The wheels of karma are too complex. We don't know what happens between people in relationships. We only see based on our filters, a very limited view, and we judge it. But the rivers of karma run deep. You know, I remember once when I was with my spiritual teacher, there was a boy your age. His parents had brought him there. And that boy was sitting very peacefully on the swing. There used to be a swing in that living room, very peacefully. And after the whole satsang, the program, everyone got up, they were talking to each other, mingling, asking, introducing themselves and all that. So someone went to the boy's parents and said, "What is wrong with your boy?" So they were shocked. They said, "What do you mean, what is wrong with the boy?" So this man said to the parent, "You know, a child his age should not be sitting like this quietly. He should be running around here, there, creating noise, be distracted." And these parents didn't know what to tell this man. And I overheard this whole conversation. And I felt that I was that boy because I was quiet. I had no problem sitting, doing nothing. But people had a problem. They would come up to me and say, "What's wrong?" Then I thought something must be wrong. So I started thinking about what's wrong. You see how the mind is. It is so influenced by what people say that an adult has a fixed view that a child must be running and playing around. What if the child is not designed that way? I really went up to the parents and apologized on that man's behalf. I said, "I'm really sorry you had to be at the receiving end of this." But that was that man's conditioning. That's how he thought all children should be. So be it. So this teaching says, accept people as they are. Don't try to change them. Don't try to tell them how they should be. Who are you? A parent can guide a child. That is a different equation. But beyond that, who are we to tell people how they should be and should not be? What right do we have? Yes, we can express ourselves. If someone does something which hurts me, I can say, rather than "you hurt me, I have felt hurt." Whether you intended it or not, I don't know. That is a different approach. There's no harm in expressing myself. But see, the whole dialogue changes because I'm no longer training my guns at people like I used to. That is the only difference. So simple. Ekdam simple. I don't know if I mentioned this at one satsang. Years back, 20 years ago, there was some politician and there were riots in his town. And the live TV is there. They are interviewing him. He's on the streets. So you can see him in the camera and behind you can see all arson and looting going on. And the interviewer asks him, "Ki kaise hai vatavaran idhar? How is the atmosphere here?" He said, "Ekdam peaceful." That becomes life. Ekdam peaceful. Whatever happens is happening, but I am ekdam peaceful. I am fine. Would anyone like to ask anything or share anything? Sure. Doesn't seem to be like anyone else is wanting to ask a question.
So please pardon me if I am asking something irrelevant.
Not at all.
So all this talk about do this, do that, thought coming, not coming, blaming, not blaming. If I understand Ramesh Ji's teachings, he said, "Jo aana hai, wo to aayega. Don't blame yourself. That thought of hate coming, so be it. Thought of love come, so be it." At the most, he says, that's what I understand. Try to witness it. Involvement bhi hoga, hoga. Know you are getting involved. So, what should I call you?
My name.
Okay. So, Gautam, the issue about trying to do this, trying to do that, and most of us, frankly, do not succeed. I'm the first one. Kuch bhi kar lo bhai sahab, jo hona hoga, wo hota hai. So that is my first question, that an ordinary man, you may be at a different stage, an ordinary person like me, you know, should I feel, try to change myself? I should hate it, not hate it. If I'm hating it, there's something wrong. I should look at myself and say there's something wrong with me. You know what you told just now. Is it possible for an ordinary man to do it? Should he attempt to do it?
What is your name?
Ashok.
Ashok. Ashok, we are all ordinary people here.
Well, there are levels.
Now, the thing is, why would Krishna tell Arjuna in chapter 3, the ego deluded thinks I am the doer? Why are sages mentioning this point? Because us ordinary people are generally not at peace because we are steeped in doership. We believe everyone does things, including myself. And that being steeped in doership disturbs my peace. And so when someone, a wise being, says, hey, just relook at this and understand that God is the primal doer, the objective, so to speak, of imparting that teaching is for the mind to accept the will of God and be at peace. Otherwise, the mind will continue being a disturbed mind till its last breath. Now the question is, having been exposed...
That is where the whole thing comes. If the mind has to get disturbed, it will get disturbed. No one can stop it. If the mind is destined, and I'm quoting Ramesh here, if the mind is going to get disturbed, it will get disturbed. You can't help it. It is your karma, you face it. At best, and that is where there's a little disconnect, Ramesh says, witness it. Now that also has to happen. That also you cannot, you can suddenly be very angry and say, I'm going to witness it. At the most, in retrospect, you can say, yaar jo hona tha hua, gussa aa gaya. At the most, if I've hurt him, maafi maang lunga aur kya. Mujhe gussa aaya, theek hai, main apne se baat. Is that my correct interpretation of Ramesh's teaching? That is the question. Whether I'm able to apply to it, answer is no. So is that the correct interpretation of Ramesh?
You have to ask yourself, based on your personal experience, does the concept of non-doership appeal to me? For example, if there is someone who has pained me in my life, am I now able to understand that this person was playing out their script the way it was designed by God and I happen to be at the receiving end? Am I willing to see what has happened between us in this light? This you could call as sadhana. And make no mistake, Rameshji told his entire satsang that every evening sit for 20 minutes and ask yourself about what happened in the day, review it, and see for yourself if people are the doer of their actions. And he would give examples. He would say, supposing you saw an old lady who wanted to cross the road and you helped that old lady cross the road, ask yourself, was it your doing or did it depend on seeing an old lady who wanted to cross the road? If that was not seen, your action would not have happened. Secondly, you were designed in such a way that compassion arose and you helped her. Someone else may not be designed that way. So this was the sadhana. He did not say, don't do anything. If you're meant to hate, you'll hate. That is missing the point completely. Yes, he said we have our limitations because we are operating on our own hardwired conditioning. Therefore, old patterns come up. And they only need to be witnessed because, as you rightly said, we can't do anything about them. But in that light of witnessing, as he would say, the seeing is the only doing necessary. The seeing is the only doing necessary. In that light of witnessing, that is where change happens and transformation comes. Because in the light of witnessing, I am no longer involved in thinking in the duration of time, like I used to be, blaming and condemning people. So there is a difference. It is not about continue blaming and condemning people all your life. If it's meant to happen, it will happen. If it's not meant to, it won't. If the teaching doesn't appeal to you, you will reject it by all means. But if it appeals to you and you see it in your daily living, you will see by and by fresh conditioning about circumstances in your life, the people in your life, how they behave. That new conditioning will start overriding the old conditioning. That is how it works. And the only measure is to know, am I more at peace today than I was 1 year ago? That is the only measure. So there's no point getting lost in concepts and losing oneself in this intellectual debate. Rather, Look at my daily life, my daily living. Where do I stand in relation to people and myself? That is where I will find my peace.
Thank you. If no one has anything else, I'll just carry on.
Of course, there's lots of time.
Hi, my name is Bhavna. Yeah. So, you know, the example that you gave of the child, you know, who was on the swing and he was quiet. So probably the message, I'm just hypothetically, this child might come across judgments like quiet is bad. And this child grows up, the parents are concerned, you know, the child is quiet. So my question is, when I get the teachings, the see or the non-doership, but sometimes when there are collective judgments, you know, when quiet really becomes bad, how does one really break through that? Because sometimes it does get overwhelming. And, you know, you start questioning yourself, like, maybe I should do something about it. So how does, even when you have that knowledge, you sometimes go into self-doubt. And because there are a lot of people who believe in the same thing. It's like a collective consciousness. So how does one, I often find myself there in a lot of situations.
So, in this instance, you are the minority because the collective consciousness is saying one thing. And all minorities feel exactly the way you are feeling, isn't it? It is having a minority point of view. That is why minorities feel that they are the receiving end. That is the design of life. Now, knowing this, I do precisely that which I think and feel I should do. That does not change. But the only change is, I have seen that I am a minority by God's design. The collective has a different point of view by God's design. I can do what I think and feel I should do. The results are not in my control, God's design. More importantly, if this is the way it was meant to be, the collective majority is not doing something to me. It is a happening which was meant to happen. Now I have two choices. Either I decide I don't do anything or I do anything. But the burden of doership is lifted from my shoulders because I am not getting back or doing things to people. I am just objectively in a situation. I have witnessed the whole scenario. And now I find that rather than reacting, I am responding to the situation because this light of witnessing, this objectivity has come in. Earlier, someone pushes your button, you react. That's how we live our lives. We just keep getting triggered. But now we can see this more clearly. What is going on? Why is this happening? Understanding it. And when this individuality is taken away from the equation, I'll be surprised to find that there's a different way of operating. This need to get back at people who've done things to me will drop. Yet, I may have a certain point of view or want to express something or say something, by all means, depending on how I am designed. It does take time. It does take time. And better it takes time. You see, when something happens gradually, it's more stable. When it happens suddenly, you can go topsy-turvy. It takes time, no doubt.
I would just like to share one of my experiences. So I used to be a very shy person. I was labeled as a shy boy in school. And in my whole schooling, I would just hide myself, sit in a corner where nobody observes me, and I would not speak. I never spoke. Some of my teachers said, this boy is completely gone. He's going to lose out on everything. And my father was at a very influential position. So they were worried. My parents were worried. So they tried helping me to communicate better, speak. Nothing worked. I didn't do it. And I started gaining weight. And it reflected into my teens. And it went on till my college. One day, just one day, somebody asked me to say something about a particular topic. And I just stood up and started addressing a gathering of 60 people. And I spoke, I kept speaking, and I could hold them for 1.5 hours. I don't know where it came
from. From all the years you didn't speak.
Yes, but there was no fear. There was no fear. So, you know, my mother was surprised and she said, how did this happen? I said, I don't know, but it happened. And now I can't stop. Just wanted to share with you that you never know how things, you know, turn out. So just all the best for that.
You know, and more importantly, when you really see people can't help being themselves, just like you can't, you will find qualities in someone else you never could see earlier because your focus was on the bad points. But now you start seeing because you're neutral now. You're not off-kilter. Now you're neutral. So you start seeing, hey, you know, this person may be very mean, but in these instances, I could not do what they did. So the focus shifts. That is what happens. Because we are obsessed with the negative polarity. We are life negative. We are obsessed with all the wrong. That is what has happened. If someone has taken my money unjustly, I'm obsessed with that person. Where I'm getting money from is no problem. I'm not obsessed with them because that is coming my way. I'm comfortable. Where there's pain, I'm uncomfortable. My money, is it? Is it your money? Money is money. Who said it's yours? It came from somewhere. And when you spend it, it's going somewhere else. Whose money? I earned money. Did you? Or did God give you a set of attributes and circumstances which enabled money to come your way? Is it your money? This doership, my effort, my doing, my money, that is the misconception. Of course, if I lose money, there will be pain. But beyond the pain, there will be no hatred for the other or myself. That pain will give me what is called experience, what not to do in future. All I can do is try. I may still do the same mistake. We don't know. We don't know the cards which have been dealt by the hand of destiny. But because we have understood this whole teaching of non-doership, non-duality, what is non-duality? Not to. Appears as to, but not to. Why not to? All the gadgets in the kitchen can only function if electricity is going through them. So which is more important, the gadgets or the electricity? But so far, I have been obsessed with gadgets. Now, I'm obsessed with electricity. Now I see the light, the impersonal light of I am, pure being, shining through everyone. This pure being, which I never lost because as a baby it was there, that consciousness, that conscious presence of the baby is right here, right now. It has never left me. That innocence of being has never left me. If it did, I would be dead. It is so easy to tap into that. And how does one tap into that? By removing the stones. No resentments.
My ego identifies with that consciousness. Then the duality starts.
You could say that. You could say that. Everything is pure because even the ego was not created by me. But this ego which has disturbed my very being, my foundation, by all the stuff, that is the impurity. When that is removed, the ego is functioning as a pure ego.
So when two people are talking, so my consciousness is talking to your consciousness.
Appears that way because it is identified with this body and this body. But it is only consciousness, right? If you were not conscious and I was not conscious, can two dead bodies talk to each other? No. So electricity is electricity. It's not your electricity and my electricity. But because in your case, consciousness is identified with a name and form, it becomes identified consciousness. In the waking state, it is identified consciousness operating. In deep sleep, it is impersonal consciousness. Two sides of the same coin. Ultimately, it is consciousness, but identified with this name and form and with that name and form.
So you can observe your own consciousness in action.
Yes. And it really doesn't mean doing anything. When you see by and by, my mind is no longer filled with the stuff it used to be filled with earlier. It will happen naturally. It's all seen as a play of consciousness. What is written on your t-shirt? No, hers. What?
Currently unsupervised.
Currently unsupervised. I saw just yesterday on someone's t-shirt, it was written, I'm not weird, I'm just a limited edition. Yes. Is this your first time? Have you seen any videos or read any books?
I have been seeing a lot of your videos, and I have found a lot of solace in my life because of that. I'm Jyoti. I've also written to you. I mailed you. Yeah. And your team has answered back.
Thank God.
Immediately, very promptly, in fact. Yeah. And they send me some supporting videos so that I could find solace in whatever problem I had addressed to you. I'm Jyoti Mantri. I have heard you say that as you progress in life and as you get blow after blow, you realize how meaningless life is. There's no meaning to it. Usually we tend to find meaning in life. There comes a stage where you feel there is no meaning, there is no cause and effect, and there is no control. These are three things that I learned through the trials and tribulations that I went through. And then you said that it is better to live life, or you learn to live life in a dispassionate manner. So I would like you to elaborate on this. You know, what is dispassionate manner?
It is natural. When you realize that the outside world, the world of materiality, is transient. If I'm deriving my happiness from something outside myself, I'm going to be let down sooner or later. You see, this is the classic trap. As children, what happens? Our parents replace one toy after another, after another, after another. This sets us up for disaster. I read a book by a Russian who's now in his late 70s, Lazarev, who says, rather than instilling spiritual aspiration in a child, when a parent starts doing this and also negotiating with a child that if you behave like this, I'll give you this toy, you are setting the child up from the material world and disappointment, because the pleasure is derived for a limited time and then you go on to the next object. So what does Ramana Maharshi mean when he says, if not the first blow, then the second, if not this? Then you say, what is life about? Clearly it can't be about this, because everything is so fleeting and so, everything is so temporary. That is when the spiritual search begins. That is the journey within. Now, when this dispassion arises, because I'm no longer as passionate as I used to be, because I can see that that passion has made me swing like this for how long? Some people, if that's their destiny for all their life, they will swing like that. But for others who have, that is why he would say, thank God for your suffering. Thank God for your suffering so that you can see what's happening. Then naturally, when you realize pleasures come and go, one develops an attitude of dispassion. So the pleasure is enjoyed, but not pursued like I used to pursue it earlier. If something comes pleasurable, I enjoy it. But I don't get miserable. We get miserable, what if I lose that? Then when we lose that, we want the next pleasure, not realizing that life is pleasure and pain, and we don't know what is going to come next. So when we start living a dispassionate life, it does not mean dispassion in the sense of not giving 100% to life. I give 100% to the task at hand. If I have a hobby, I give 100%. If I have a job, 100%. But knowing, for example, if I have a job, I give my 100%, but tomorrow the job could go, depending on God's will. It does not mean I'm dispassionate about my job, but I'm dispassionate to the degree that that is not where I derive my sense of self and happiness from, because I know the flow of life is such that the job may go tomorrow. So that is the only difference that happens. It is not a despondency. That is one stage that you are despondent, especially people who have seen more pain than pleasure in life would rather not be there. But everything is a learning. Everything is karma in action. And when the teaching is behind us, we find that we are able to navigate our boat of life in a more equanimous and peaceful way. That is all. We are here for a certain number of years, a fixed number of breaths. Nobody knows. Now we have realized, in an impermanent life, what permanency am I trying to find? What security am I finding? Does it make sense? And so when the grace of the Guru is there, which is not an individual, as consciousness. Consciousness brings certain number of people to talks like this. Could be various teachers, various yogas. Consciousness brings them so that they can ask these questions, the meaning of life, the purpose of life, and realize, yes, where can I find my peace? It does not guarantee that my pains will be taken away. But now I stop blaming. Earlier I would blame people, then I would blame God. Now I realize who is to blame for what. You had experienced a loss.
Yeah.
Now it's coming to me.
Yeah. So I now understood what is the difference between despondency, as you said, and dispassionate. I was confusing dispassionate as despondency.
And you had lost your child?
Yeah.
How was that?
All of a sudden.
Yeah, they say it is the worst pain for a parent to experience the loss of a child. But we can never know God's will. We can never know. When I realize that most of life doesn't make sense, I stop trying to make sense of life. I just live it day by day, hour by hour, and leave it to that higher power that in this life, it clearly seems I have been destined for more pain. Just give me the strength to deal with it. That is all I ask for. And where does this strength come from? What is called the spiritual dimension? Just a word I know. But what is that dimension in simple words? Where I can find peace through my pain? That is why the Buddha said, samsara is dukkha, nirvana is shanti, and they are not two. I have to find it through my pain, Rupal. I know it sounds hard. That it could be no other way. A painting can never know why its painter painted it. Can a painting know? Can a painting know why its painter painted it? If you are painting a painting, that painting is not going to know why you did it. You got inspired by nature or something happened and you made the painting. So similarly, we are God's creation. We are paintings. We are trying to find out the will of the painter. Impossible. Not possible.
So I was thinking, every time Rameshji used to say that things could have been worse than this. So I was very happy to come here and my wife told me, don't go and cry again. I'm not there, but you don't go and cry again. I said, I'm happy. So I also understood the last time when I broke out is because of the pressure in the office and all. I have not talked to anyone. I was very lonely and those things. And it happened. So I said, I accept what has happened to me. But I also accept that things in my life is by the grace of the mother are still good. Because I lost my friend few days back, a very close friend whom with I used to work. One of my friend lost a child like her. And I was telling my family, things could have been worse. We are still better. We are all here together. We can still fight back. There is nothing, and the grace is always with us. So we should feel happy about it.
And feel free to cry here.
Cry also. Yeah.
Just tell your wife, I am not doing the crying. Crying is happening. This is like the child who was having a sneezing fit, could not control it. So the mother got bugged. And she told the child, stop sneezing. And the child said, but mommy, I am not sneezing. It is sneezing me. It's a happening.
And the thing was when I saw the kid here. So in all my friends, I am a little divergent type because I look into spirituality much more. But I understand that it was what I was born with. Because when I was a small child, I met Swami Chinmayanand of all the things in a real person. So, and I was very inspired by him. My father was in the Chinmayanand mission and everything. I used to read him a lot, follow him and all those. There was not YouTube there, so every Saturday we used to do it. And that is something which has stayed with me. Though even there is pain, pleasure, things have come. But this is something when I see it from the childhood, it is something constant. And I have been doing, I am meeting the best of the spiritual people. And something in my consciousness has attracted them. Or something is happening. And I should be more open and open to that grace which is bringing me here.
Because that is the search for truth. Yes. Sat Sang. Sat, truth, Sang. Sangha. The community of truth. It is very beautiful.
So I told my wife in the morning, I'm going to the satsang. She is in Daman. She don't cry. I said, I feel very happy also.
It's a crazy life.
Yeah.
Now, you know, my mother knew a couple in Pune who lost their child. He used to ride the bike and he was careless, wouldn't wear the helmet. Now, when that happened, life took a different turn for them. They started an orphanage. It was not easy because it's always a challenge to raise money and all, but that became their passion. And, you know, it's quite doing quite well now. So that was their destiny, you see. So we don't know how it flows.
So no one knows. So I a few days ago when I met Alok Da, he told me, I was into a depression, some sort of a thing. I said, I will die, this, that, everything. He said, things can't be worse. These are still better. The grace is with you. Don't worry so much. And he told me a story that there was a couple who had come to Pondicherry to meet him. He said, you can never think about a situation as bad as that. They had three children and one of the child had booked a ticket to Pondicherry. All the three children died on the same day in the same accident. And then they still came to Pondicherry and met him. And then their life took a different turn. So then once I could understand some of this thing, the experiencing, then what I can gather is that peace and harmony is the first basis on which you start your daily reality of life. As you move on and if you are destined for new things or the consciousness grows, then you will have certain experience which will let you know or your consciousness to grow more and more into that. And there also is the most important thing, like Sri Aurobindo used to say, there is the grace above and mother. And the only thing right now which I think about is how do we surrender more and more to that grace? Because your thinking mind would never let you understand. It will always judge you whether you are doing this or that. The only way out is the consciousness, letting it express through every part of your beingness, your cells and your body. And that is the only, I think, I can only aspire for it, and rest is the grace above.
Surrender is the most beautiful thing when it happens. The surrendering to the divine will, thy will be done. Thy will be done, and this too shall pass. Two mantras. These kids must have found it a very heavy, must be, y'all are in for trouble when y'all step out.
They are waiting, this too shall pass.
What is your name?
Shalin. Yeah.
Shalin, your dad behind you?
Yeah.
We usually speak to each other. He says, Dad, I don't want to talk about your spiritual stuff during the day. I want to do it at night. And then before he sleeps, he talks to me sometimes. So I just brought him. I thought,
too boring.
It's not my first time.
But you have seen some videos.
Yes, I've seen your videos. I've read your book, Pointers, with Ramesh.
You're from Bombay or from?
I grew up here and then 20 years ago, I moved to US. So I live over there and I'm visiting now. So it was just perfect. I was here today and I'm on the WhatsApp group and I always see it. I want to go. And then it happened to be just the day when I'm here. Tomorrow, I'm going to North India with his mom. And have a daughter. It's her birthday today. So she's outside with mom. So I'm going to Punjab tomorrow.
That is your hometown?
No, I grew up in Mumbai. I grew up in Ghatkopar. My wife was born there and then she moved there when she was little. And then I got married to her. I went there. So basically arranged marriage. So, and these kids were born there. So... He had an option to go shopping with mom or come with me. So he picked me.
When you go out, he might say, I should have gone shopping.
He's learning his ideas.
Yeah. What about you? How old are you? Shalin, how old are you?
13.
And your name?
Arna.
What does it mean?
God Lakshmi.
I have Lakshmi so close to me. Will you come every time there's a talk? Did you get bored here? Was it okay?
Yeah.
And who's behind you? So, has your mother bored you with spiritual talk like Shalin's dad? No? No? Inclined. Nice. It's so nice when that comes from within. Beautiful.
So recently I just heard one of your reels on loneliness. It was such a beautiful thing where you just said, look, the babies don't feel lonely. So it was such a, like, you know, because I've been hearing a lot this word, and I don't know why I've been hearing all this. Like, you know, many people coming across having this issue of feeling loneliness, and just think this popped up. And it's very beautiful. The babies don't feel lonely. So who is the one who feels lonely?
I don't remember saying that, but that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a
beautiful. It just sometimes just comes, you know. That's what I mean. It's just there's a UB40 song which says, this loneliness won't leave me alone.
It's something very beautiful to know about, like, you know, because child is just lying there and he doesn't even know whether somebody is around, and he's happy just in being. So lonely comes from personhood. Yeah, it's lovely. I wanted to share that.
Welcome back.
It's related to what he was saying, and it was another video that I watched of Ramesh Balsekar. So in that, you were saying that when you're angry and you become aware, the anger drops off. So that I'm connecting that with non-doership. So a lady brings talks about that, and then he says, but can you decide when you become aware? That awareness is also happening. So when you get anger and you get involved into it, then you have another moment of awareness when you become aware that you're angry, and that's when it drops off. That happening of becoming aware is also another happening.
You see, it's like in meditation. Let's say you just sit and close your eyes and there's a thought coming. You're thinking about work, and suddenly you realize that you were thinking about work. That is the awareness which cuts off the involvement. You have not yourself thought, and therefore it's cut off. It's the same thing what you're saying.
Yes.
That thought, I am involved, cuts off the involvement. And that thought was not in your control.